Hello, testing mic 1, 2, 3, testing streaming.
Hi, Igor, can you hear me?
Yes, yes, Anissa, I hear you well. Do you hear me?
Igor?
Do you hear me, Anissa? Thank you.
Igor, can you hear us?
I hear you. Do you hear me?
Igor, can you hear us okay?
Is the mic on? Oh, yeah. We are in... Testing. This is the LGR workshop. We are in Morrison. Start time is 1300. The
Nicolette, is this you?
Yes,
this is Nicolette. Yes, you see.
We will start in a minute. This is a session on IDN Root Zone LGR workshop.
bird zone, not root zone.
One, two.
Variants and whole label evaluation rules. We will also get some community updates. Igor will be joining us remotely to give us an update on the work being done by Armenian Generation Panel. And we have Dusan here with us, who will be giving an update on behalf of the Cyrillic Generation Panel. We also have a guest, Philip Colin, who will share some an application of the data in some other context as well, in addition to the root zone LGR. We will then have a question answer session at the end. So let us start the workshop very briefly. For those of you who may not have the background, basically the LGR project within the IDN TLD program is looking at developing a route, label generation rules or for a root zone. These label generation rules will allow basically to determine what is a valid top-level domain, and will also determine whether a valid TLD label is going to be, will have variants or not, and whether those variants will be allocatable or blocked. The work starts from developing a maximal starting repertoire according to a procedure which was finalized by the community. The maximal starting repertoire is developed by integration panel. This work has been largely addressed. And based on this maximal starting repertoire, community-based generation panels work and define the rules and for code points and variants and label constraints for various scripts. We have multiple script-based community generation panels active, Arabic generation panel, Armenian generation panel, Chinese generation panel are seated, formally seated with ICANN, and now working towards finalization of their proposals. Arabic generation panel has finished the work and completed the first, at least the first draft of their proposal, which they are now reviewing. We heard updates from Arabic, Chinese, Korean, Japanese generation panels in the morning. We will now also hear updates from Cyrillic and Armenian generation panels today in this session. And then there are also some other generation panels which are active, which also include Neo-Brahmi in Myanmar. And then Greek, Khmer, Latin, Sinhala, and Tibetan panels are also initiating. Once they complete their proposals, that proposal goes to integration panel, and integration panel reviews that proposal for eventual integration into what is called the label generation rule set for the root zone. To go into more details on the work which is being done by integration panel some of the observations which integration panel wants to share with the community. Let us move to Will Tan, who's the member of integration panel, and he'll talk about the guidelines for LGR development. Thank
you. Thank you, Sarmat. Hi, my name's Will. I'm an integration panel member. I'm going to just talk through a document that we have published in the hopes that it will help generation panels in their work. We've talked about this in a different variation, I think, in LA. But this is kind of in light of the recently published document, which is the guidelines for developing LGR. I'm going to just highlight some of the points in there. The document is called Guidelines for Developing Script-Specific LGRs for Integration into the Root Zone LGR. This is now out for public comment along with two other documents. So let's just delve into it. Here's just the phases that we envision GPs would go through in generally in that order. Like, you start with the MSR, then you choose your code points repertoire, find out whether there are any variants and what the variants are and how to dispose of the variants, and then determine if whole label evaluation rules are needed, and then eventually prepare for the submission for your proposal. Always start with the MSR, which is the maximal starting repertoire. As of currently, we have published version 2 of the MSR, which includes 6 new scripts: Armenian, Ethiopic, Khmer, Myanmar, Thana, and Tibetan. We haven't changed any of the code points of repertoires that are in the scripts that are already included in MSR 1. Now, so when a GP forms, you first select an ISO 15924 script code as your scope. This is what we're going to be working on. And that pretty much implicitly restricts the code point repertoire that your working set would be an intersection of your script code with the MSR2 repertoire, with the exception of like inherited output points for some GPs that need it. And so the GPs may, you know, as part of their mandate, they might be working on some other things, or you might want to consider a bigger, wider set of code points beyond the MSR, but, you know, really for the work of the LGR, we're looking at a subset of the MSR. Now, so once you have that intersection of the MSR and your script code, and the first bullet here with the table is really just an illustration of if you were an Armenian panel, you said that you would say that I'm doing the ARMN script code, and therefore you look in the MSR XML file and look for anything that are tagged with SC:Armenian. For Greek, similarly. For Han, similar. And say, for example, with some script codes, ISO 15924 script codes are actually pseudo codes for multiple scripts. So like, for example, JPAN, there are actually
JPAN.
Yeah, that's actually composed of three different script codes, and therefore you would actually, you know, pick any of occurrences of any of these three script codes.
Eagle, you should not be able to hear us.
So
can you just let me know that you can hear me?
Then you would. Then you.
Thank you very much, Eagle.
You have the.
Should I talk more by phone?
Sorry, Igor, we'll get to your presentation momentarily. We'll let the current speaker finish off for the moment.
Okay.
If you could just mute your microphone whilst that's happening, we'll get back to you straight away.
That's the outer limit of it. You would then start again.
Sorry, you give me the sign when you start talk.
It's like an interference of sort. We have a translator, perhaps. I'll try to just continue. Once you have a maximal outer limit, you would then look at each of these code points for to see if they qualify for inclusion in your LGR proposal, in your LGR. So, you know, we expect the GPs to positively affirm that each code point, or, you know, if it's kind of, each code point essentially has to be accounted for with some rationale for why, you know, they should be included. I mean, if you have a large repertoire like CJK, we don't expect every single one. If you have a block of it because, you know, they are part of the... There's some, you know, as long as you have some sort of a reference that are reasonable, that helps us in reviewing and understanding why they should be included, that's always helpful. For more info, see the considerations document. There's a list of references at the end, and you can find all the documents in the document repository. So this is just a very short highlight of the points to consider. And when looking at just a few points to consider when you're developing your repertoire is that many of the GPs probably already are... but, you know, there are existing IDN tables that are being used on the second level today, you know, in many TLDs. Probably that's a good starting point for many GPs. We just wanted to kind of highlight the point that this work is going to... You're going to place your existing table in light of the root zone, which is a shared resource, and we value the conservatism principle very much here, and that, you know, so in view of the fact that the root zone is a shared resource for the entire internet population, as, you know, as the IAB RFC states, that actually necessitates a more restrictive LGR so that we can be as we can move with caution and everyone can benefit from it, right? And the root zone LGRs are there are also differences between what you might put into the root zone versus what you might put into the second level IDN tables. For example, the root zone LGR is script definitely script level focus, whereas many of the IDN tables have a very language based focus. We also don't we frown upon ASCII mixing in the root zone, and also that you may have different variants and dispositions in the root zone LGR than what you would use in the second level. So just some of the considerations when you're, you know, as you're developing the repertoire and rules. The next phase would be to determine, once you have that repertoire, you would determine if that repertoire, and for each code point in your repertoire, you would determine if there are any variants, and if there are, how does that affect, how does the presence of those variants affect labels that are being registered, you know? How do they permutate, and how do they eventually determine this? How do you determine the status of the final labels that are generated out of these variants? You know, primarily, we're working with blocked. We're actually just looking at blocked or allocatable. And in fact, the procedure is very clear that we want to minimize the number of allocatable variants, and we want to most of the time we just want blocked variants. Again. Conservation, conservatism at play here. And so for more info, please see the variance rules document. And as part of, the LGR process has a mechanism called whole label evaluation rules, which are essentially think of them as regular expressions or patterns that you can apply to restrict the labels that can be generated from your LGR. You don't necessarily need them in all the generation panels. Some scripts may not need it. If you do need it, then so it is up to the GP to think to consider whether WLE rules are required, and if they are required. There are some considerations in terms of balancing security and simplicity because WLE rules do incur overhead in terms of your LGR becomes more complex if you have rules in there, because it's not just a straightforward looking at the label whether that is registrable as a label. You have to kind of process the WLE rules as well, so it compromises simplicity, but often the WLE rules are there to enhance security, to basically restrict the registrable labels to a smaller subset of the permutations. So in general, we think it's a good thing as long as it's not overly complex. And for more resources, do see the WLE rules document. It's a bit more technical, but the integration panel is here to help and happy to discuss any rules that you might be thinking of or how you might go about implementing certain rules. We can certainly help with that. So a point to note about coordination between GPs, my colleague Michelle is going to talk more about that. Essentially, we just whenever there are scripts are related, some form of coordination is needed. It's not a requirement of the procedure per se. We do think that it's a good idea to coordinate beforehand for a number of reasons. So we encourage all GPs with shared repertoires to coordinate with each other early and communicate often. So we envision that most GPs, even if there are coordination is required with other GPs, you would still first work on your own repertoire, your own variants, and your own rules, and produce an LGR that is just strictly your script, And then after coordination, you have this merged LGR that you can present side by side, the lean one that's just pertaining to your script and the one that's integrated, and you can sort of see how integration affects your community. And that's what we sort of advocate, that, you know, GPs should do that. Finally, we just wanted to explain what we expect to see in the GP proposal. The formal definition, or the is really the XML definition of the LGR that has to be compliant with the machine readable XML format, which is Draft Davies IDN tables draft, internet draft. There are, so that in that XML definition, you would have your code point repertoire references, you'd have the rules and variants all in there. And along with that, we would, you would also submit a document basically with prose and text and explaining your choices and rationale and how you arrived at your decisions, and for each of the elements that are, you know, present in the XML formal definition. And along with that, we would appreciate, we actually need the examples. If you have variants or if you have WLE rules, then we need test cases, essentially. We need example labels and what are the expected dispositions of those labels, so that we can verify that what you think it should work, how you think it should behave is how we think it should behave. So, and optional, you know, any kind of supporting documents, we appreciate that. And so for more information, see the requirements for LGR proposals document. And throughout the process, we would really like, we'd like to know what the GP has been, the thoughts and the process, keep us up in the loop so that we can help when needed. And, you know, if there are any issues that we think that could pose a challenge, we could, you know, feedback to you early as well. The procedure is really just a Bible for us. So, again, always go back to the procedure and read it. Here's the list of resources. All the documents are there. You can get to it by going to the RootZone LGR project wiki and then going to the document repository, and all these documents will be there for you to download. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Will. And we'll move on. And Michelle will be talking about how to design variants and WLE rules. Michelle.
Okay. Good afternoon. So to save some time, we had some overlap between Will's presentation and mine, so I'll try not to go over the same points. So I'll probably go a bit faster in some slides. Okay, so we are going to talk first about variants. So some basics on them. First, we'll see what variants are. It's, you know, perceived as being the same character by the user community. So it could be, you know, same can really cover a lot of different ways. You can either be saying same as being semantically identical, but very visually different. Like, good example for that would be traditional versus simplified Chinese, where they look different, but in fact, you know, the user community perceives them as being the same thing. Other case, you have similarities from an appearance point of view. You would be basically looking at two characters across script, for example, that look exactly the same, but in fact they belong to different scripts, because the root is a shared resource. Again, even if they're from different script, we may still have to take that in account when we do the integration. So good example of that, obviously, is Greek, Cyrillic, and Latin, which is a perfect example of seeing a lot of variants that do cross, go across scripts. So the important point that many, in fact, LGR don't have to worry about variants. It's not, you know, everyone does not have to worry about them. We see many, like you know, the Arabic LGR has, you know, varying issues. Probably many in CJK will have the same thing, but we know many other scripts where it will not be, you know, an issue whatsoever, and it should make your life quite a bit easier. Again, you know, variants live, for, in our case, in a root zone, so we have no idea of languages on the script. You know, is a script based on the, even in some cases, we're sharing the script multiple among multiple LGR. So we have to take all those things into account when, you know, both the integration panel is looking at them on where you're doing your own work on defining those variants. Despite apparent restriction due to these block variants, you have to understand that you define the variants at the code point level, but when we do the disposition of them, we do that at the label level. So it's very different. You know, you're only blocking a label that has exactly the same content except for those, you know, variant code points. So it's not as bad as it looks at first approach. You still have, you know, thousands, hundreds of thousands of available labels, even for an existing you know, writing system. You just have to add one single character, you know, and then it's a different label, you know, and so you don't really, you're not really blocked by this variant disposition. So, you know, some requirements for variants, they have to be symmetric. So if you define relation A to B, you have to also B to A, and transitive on the fact that you have more than two, you know, all the relationships have to be defined. It's very important to do all of them. On obviously, as integration panel, we will verify and enforce those rules. There's no if. Those have to be respected. So it makes, you know, if your variant set is large for a given, you know, set admits, you know, the number of correlation can be in fact pretty large. On obviously, variant and intersect scripts must be defined on each of those scripts. So, you know, that shows, for example, when you have a shared homoglyph, you know, among scripts, that means that we cannot do the work on one of the scripts if the work is not done on all of them. And that's a good example is between Latin, Greek, and Cyrillic. Those have to be worked in parallel, and we cannot, in fact, integrate one of them without the other two being done. So it's really a clear requirement on that. And obviously, you can see, I put the O there. The O is obviously look exactly identical between those three scripts, so we will need a variant disposition for all those three scripts. So some, you know, description of the types. You know, variants can be in repertoire within a single script. Is, you know, it does happen. We have that situation. Like in Arabic, you know, we are seeing, in fact, quite a few of those where you have, you know, characters that are very similar in appearance or almost identical, especially in Arabic because you have positional forms. You know, things are a bit more complicated because you may see on the code chart that they look very different, in fact, but if you take the medial form, they may be, in fact, exactly identical. So there's on same thing for, you know, Chinese. You may have traditional and simplified, in fact, part of the same repertoire. There may be OBC out of repertoire or across script. So out of repertoire, I mean, for example, that you may have variation relationships that do affect some of the Japanese character, but in fact, the variant set is in fact also include the characters in use in China. And those kind of situations would have to be taken in context by both the Chinese or in fact the Japanese, even if one character is in fact for them out of repertoire. We see across script, that's a case I already described before, which is the Greek, Cyrillic, and Latin situation. And type assigned to variants drives the disposition for label containing these variants. So, you know, we define for each code point that have a part of a variant set, you will define the type of variants. Typically, we use blocked on allocatable, but in fact, if you go, you can make that more complex. If you look, in fact, at the XML LGR spec, there's an example there of using traditional and simplified, where to create, you know, to minimize the number of allocatable variants, they do one thing, which is to limit the set to either all simplified, all traditional, or the original label that was applied. So, and they use, in fact, different types for that. At the end, when you get to the disposition, you still have only two ways to dispose of it. either blocked or they're locatable. They can also be invalid. That's another way, because obviously if you have a out-of-repertoire variant in the label and you try to submit that one, that's going to be considered as invalid because it's out-of-repertoire. On the use of allocatable variants, as we know, on our Bible, again, which is a procedure, says that, you know, allocatable variants are basically may be allocated to the applicant. You know, that's in, you know, I'm repeating the terms in the procedure. So there's a very clear intent that the allocatable variants are in fact to be allocated. And obviously, the allocation or delegation is totally out of scope for us. We have nothing to do with it. We are just creating a possibility for those labels. The best to do those allocatable is that you're in repertoire. Obviously, that's kind of is a given. But variants are inherently the same characters. They're not just homoglyphs. They're also the same from all purposes to the user. And also the third point, which is kind of sometimes a bit more difficult to determine, but is an important point nevertheless, that variants, allocatable variants, are really better in use for cases where it's difficult to enter the alternative, you know, where you have only one choice among many of the, you know, variants that could be existing, you know, for one character. And, you know, we have some example again in the Arabic situation where you have the, you know, the Arabic Ye or the Farsi Ye, and where it's very difficult to get either one in your own keyboard. You know, this, you know, I will not go too much in detail, but that's kind of the, on those kind of input mechanism or input, you know, limitation are really a key aspect of why you may want to do allocatable. Some cases, in fact, may be treated by not using variants at all. You may even think that, you know, maybe if there's a slight difference, maybe you kind of want to leave the confusability issue to a higher level, you know, to let the, you know, the string review go for with it and not try to enshrine the rules in the lower level. Because some situations are complicated enough that it may not be possible to establish, you know, simple rules. Or because you just create too many variants. I mean. On the last point, obviously, you know, we only say they may be allocated when, you know, in the procedure. We don't say anything what's going to happen beyond that. And as we, many of us know, creating a variant, allocatable variants, is really going to be complicated. DNS is not really designed to do that, especially if you start to have a lot of subzone under the, you know, the root with allocatable with variants that look the same and have been dedicated to the same entity. How do you kind of maintain the sameness through all the different levels of the subzone of that root entry? So you should not, you know, we want to be conservative on the number of allocatable variants you create. So some example, you know, I use Greek here to give you some idea what that means. In repertoire, for example, would be a sigma versus a final sigma, which would be, you know, typically being seen as probably variants of each other. Variants of Latin, those would be out of repertoire. And variants of Cyrillic, and those would be again out of repertoire. I do provide, as you know, at the end on this talk, there is in fact a pointer to a Greek LGR. It's just a sample because we are not in the business of creating, you know, LGR, but we still have, we are making them as examples, and it shows in fact those relationships. Another one that is different is variants by integration. I took a Japanese case. Some of what I'm saying on these slides may not be correct because we had discussion with the Japanese GP in the past days. But we still don't expect the Japanese LGR to have many variants. If they do, at least at this point, they didn't have any. They may add some, but very little. So the situation, though, is that when they do the integration, they're going to get a variant set by basically absorbing some of the Chinese set. And that is something they will have to coordinate and get a common view with the Chinese set. It doesn't. So the variant set for the common repertoire have to be the same. On any character that is part of a variant set, which is partially included in their own repertoire, they have to add the out-of-repertoire into their own LGR. It's probably a bit complicated for the non-CJK folks around here, but you know, we have been through those, some of those details with the CJK panel, and they, I think they understand what we mean here. So the end result, it may result in some situation where what a panel will consider be distinct will still nevertheless be blocked in their own disposition. Important point, each LGR is still has total control on the type of variants and the disposition of them. So they can define totally different types and they can define totally different disposition. There is no need or requirement to have common disposition on types. The only requirement is to have the same content for the variant set for every character that do intersect between their repertoire. And, you know, I gave an example here where down there, there are four characters. They have some variant relationship in China, so that means that Japan also will have to do something about them. And those four characters are likely to be included also in the Japanese LGR because, you know, they're part of the basic set for Japan. So this is kind of describe a process how to do the work here. And it's, in fact, a very important point. The first one is that you really do your work on your own first. You don't have to coordinate for the sake of coordinating. First, you have to do your own work, which is to define your own repertoire independently of other groups. And then you determine your own repertoire, you determine your own variant set. And so that's kind of your first step, and this is kind of your linguistic correct view of, you know, your LGR. And when you're done with that, then you go with the other groups, and you compare your repertoire, and you compare your variant sets, and then you do basically your merge. And this is not exactly necessarily a simple process. We integration panel have some expertise to help you on those aspects. Okay, I'm asked to speed up, so sorry, I have to go a bit faster. Okay, so I'm done mostly with variants, so we're going to jump on WLE rules. So, you know, first point was already mentioned by Will, so I'm not going to repeat that. Second point was, you know, why we do use whole label evaluation rules is mostly to determine required or prohibited context, those things that don't make sense in a given writing system. We're not talking spelling here. We're talking more like, you know, things that don't make sense inherently in the writing system. And also restricting combining sequence in alphabet and enforcing simple composition rules for abugida. Quick example is combining macron below. Most of the time it's used only in pre-composed characters, but there's some, in fact, languages, like in Africa, that need the combining sequence. So you can, in fact, create a rule that basically only enforce that the combining sequence can only exist for some context. In this case, for example, we use for them, you know, that this character, this sequence with macron below can only exist as when it follows C, Q, S, and X. And you can do such a rule. It's pretty simple, in fact. Another example is TANA. TANA is, in fact, a script that is written in syllable, but is encoded as an alphabet. It's kind of historic. So we can, in fact, enforce at the WLE rules, again, a very simple set of rules that enforce that, you know, script formation by basically making sure that a consonant is always followed by a vowel on only one, and those is that there's only one vowel following each consonant. Conclusion, you know, there are complex features, no doubt about that. But, you know, as we go, we're getting more and more experience on dealing with them. And as a group, the integration panel has been really facing a lot of these issues with very different scripts. And, you know, we can really help you. It's very important that you work with us to understand how to do those things and to get a better chance to be accepted. So there is, again, on the resources, you know, Will mentioned the JAL document about variants, WLE rules. Those go in some details on some of those examples. I have also put as an example the TANA on the Greek LGR. Those are full-blown, you know, LGR examples. They do contain what you would need to do an LGR. They're obviously reasonably simple, but they do contain, in fact, the TANA WLE for TANA with, you know, the full set syntax for it. On the Greek, same thing. We added some example of how you do out-of-repertoire variants, you know, on how you implement that. So you can use them as, in fact, examples how to do things on as a tutorial. you know, to create your own set. On okay, so I was fast enough. On obviously open for question later. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Michelle. The next presentation is by Igor. He's going to be joining us remotely, and he's going to be giving us an update on the work being undertaken by Armenian Generation Panel. So do we have him online?
Yes, I am online.
Okay. Welcome, Igor, and the floor is yours.
Okay. Hello to everybody. We, in the family of Generation Panels, and first of all, I want to thank Sarmat and Nicole greatly for the in our event. Now let's go to the presentation to the first slide. Well, I mean, again, this was recently approved by ICANN. It was on November 20th. It was a great day for us. And when we did creation, our generation panel, and moved on. Next slide, please. So the Armenian language is an Indo-European language spoken by Armenians. So it's official language in Armenia and self-proclaimed Nagorno-Karabakh Republic. It has historically been spoken throughout Armenian highlands and today is widely spoken in the Armenian diaspora. Next slide, please. So Armenians have its own unique script, the Armenian alphabet, which was invented in 405, on the meaning by Nesio Pashtos. So it's a kind of independent branch of Indo-Armenian, Indo-European, sorry, language family. There are two standardized modern literary forms, Eastern and Western Armenian. The total Armenian population in the world is about 10 million. Next slide, please. So here we see the big diasporas throughout the world. So Armenians were scattered around the world after the genocide in Ottoman Empire. So we see so many communities, Armenian communities, are scattered throughout the world. Next slide, please. Next slide, please.
Go ahead, Igor. We are on the next slide.
I don't see it's okay. Next slide. So, next slide, please. So, we started the study of problems
with visual similarities. Okay, so there are some visual similarities between Latin, Cyrillic, and Greek alphabets. Okay. Next slide, please. So this is our generation panel. So I am the chair, and we have 7 experts. So next slide, please. So we started with the study of MSR2 for Armenian script. And the next step was analysis of visual similarities in Armenian and in scripts having commonality with Armenian. And we started the development of presentation for this workshop. And then we are planning to collect community opinions and remarks and development of a final report to integration panel. At the same time, we will come to a final decision on LGRs for the Armenian script. Next slide, please. So this is a schedule of meeting. So we are already on the fourth meeting. So we'll continue, and we hope to finish and submit the final report to the integration panel on March 31. Next slide, please. So Armenian General Panel, Generation Panel mailing list was created. And here is some information about that. Next slide, please. So this is the Armenian MSR2 table. So we accepted the document published in MSR2. So there are there are 38 scripts in Armenian MSR2 table. Next slide, please. So here are a result of our visual similarity evaluation. The first table is between Armenian and Latin. So we see the Armenian scripts and Latin scripts with visual similarities. So the problem exists, and we continued with starting visual similarity with the other scripts. Next slide, please. So here is a table of visual similarity evaluation between Armenian and Greek. So there are some similarities. Next slide, please. And here is similarities between Armenian and Cyrillic. Not much of them, but still there exists some. Next slide, please. And here's visual similarity within Armenian. So there are some strings that will be a bit difficult to differentiate with script. And here are on the left columns, there are examples of such strings and the corresponding scripts. And there are also similarities between scripts in Armenia. As you see, there are several scripts that are similar to other scripts. Next slide, please. So here are the conclusions that we came to. So the first conclusion, there are two standardized mutually intelligible modern literary forms, Eastern and Western Armenian, with different orthographies. So this semantically, the same word can have different spelling in Eastern and Western Armenian. But we came to opinion that this does not conclude to any LGR. As a result, the Armenian Generation Panel will not address in the LGR document issues arising from the different orthographies. Next slide, please. So, until now, we decided that visual similarities will not be reflected in the LGR or the root zone. They will be rather solved by mechanisms beyond the application of the LGR. The problem will be solved by limiting Armenian domain names strictly to the Armenia MSR table, Latin dash, and Latin numbers. Next slide, please. We anticipate that the relationships with the related scripts would not affect the content of the Armenian LGR. Visual similarities of related scripts will be blocked by the domain registration program, as it will check the scripts for the corresponding to the Armenian MSR table and will not allow domain names with visually similar code points of related scripts. We are not sure that the same blocking mechanism will be implemented in other IDN domains registration procedures, but we can recommend that to the corresponding IDNs. Next slide, please. Even understanding that visual similarity of strings and script within Armenian IDN can be used by domain registrants for phishing or registering a domain name similar to a brand domain, we cannot set any rule forbidding the visual similarity of domain names, as there is no way to distinguish whether it is normal or intentional, because of the volume of the analysis. There can be thousands and thousands of brand names, trademark and company names that we cannot analyze in order to find out whether it is will be used for phishing or some intentional malintentions. So that's all for today. That we hope for the community participation, and we are willing to receive generation panels feedback, their opinion and their advices and the remarks in order to go forward and improve our report to the integration panel. Thank you very much. That's all.
Thank you, Igor. We're running a bit late, so we'll move right to the next update from the Cyrillic script generation panel. And Dusan is here with us, and he'll take us through the presentation. And
Thank you.
Hello, everybody. I'm sorry Yuri isn't here. He got a flu, so I will be replacing him. So Cyrillic generation panel was created during last meeting in LA. The result of the work of this panel will be the proposition to MCR2 and propositions for Cyrillic script code point repertoire for LGR. Script code that panel explores is #220 Cyrillic according to ISO 15924. As you can see, in total there is a 13 countries and 108 languages that form geographical territory from Balkan in Europe up to Mongolia to, and West Pacific coast with the use of Cyrillic scripts. The panel took in consideration the following languages: Belarusian, Bulgarian, Macedonian, Mongolian, Montenegrin, Kazakh, Kyrgyz, Russian, Serbian, Tajik, Turkmen, Ukrainian, Uzbek. To simplify the work, we were divide these languages into four territory or areas: Balkan, Russia, Ukraine, Belarusia. Third one is Middle Asia, and fourth one is Mongolia. On this stage, on this stage of work, the researches of 95 ethnic minority languages in general in Russia weren't conducted. The panel proceeded from the proposition that Cyrillic structurally and historically related with Latin and Greek, but more details should examine during work of the panel. This is the general structure, and you can see the close date. The close date will be 16th of March, and staff report due 6th of April. I'm trying to speed up a little bit. So this is the table of confusion variants in Greek and Latin point codes tables for searching cross scripts confusion variants. The Latin script presented the main option and expanded option for IDN. This is the joint result of work of Balkan and Russia, Ukraine, Belorussia small groups. The Greek scripts were analyzed case for presence of cross-script hemoglyphs. Same table for Latin script. And this is Yuri's favorite. A few words on hemoglyphs and punctuation. So in Ukrainian and Belarus languages, apostrophe is not a sign. Apostrophe is a letter. So it cannot be classified as a type of punctuation. You can see how this sign is used in Ukrainian and Belarusian language. And for the conclusion, there is a six bullets. First bullet, considered confusion options only for cases of external cross scripts. We done work which gave preliminary results for cases of confusion variants in two regions, Balkan and Russia, Ukrainian, Belarusian languages. Third bullet, we cannot form a complete and balanced position to do full public comment version 2 of the maximal starting repertoire at this moment, but the Cyrillic Generation Panel will make all possible effort to make its proposals in time. We do not have data on the analysis of possible options for the confusion variants for two regions within Cyrillic scripts, Mongolian and Middle Asia. However, the unit will prepare some recommendations based on available data. And potentially can form position on develop policy recommendation which can form base for LGR. That's all.
Thank you, Dusan. Let's move on to our next presenter, Philip Collin. He's going to be presenting on behalf of his organization. This particular work is not related to LGR or the IDN program work which is being done at ICANN. It's independent work. and they're here to present what they're doing and share it with the community.
Thank you, Sarmad. My name is Philippe Collin. I'm here to represent OP3FT. OP3FT is the promoter of a technology called the Fragrance technology, and that is a new class of internet sites. And I'm telling you for the context, I'm here to replace my colleague Ben Pfister, who was a participant here at ICANN in Los Angeles, and I will be happy to answer your questions after this presentation. So first of all, the Fragrance sites themselves, they're a class of internet sites that do display and navigate the same way on all devices. And with the help of a little application called the Fragrance Player. But the beauty of it is it has it doesn't mean to replace the web in itself, but to create a new class of sites. I'm just going a little faster here. All right. The way we address each site is through a Fragrance address, and that is basically composed of two parts, the Fragrance network on the left, or actually before the star sign, which is our separator, and the site name, which is after the star sign, the separator. So you see here two types of Fragrance addresses, Fragrance star, which is the public Fragrance network, and on the right, network name star, which where you could replace network name with any name, either trademark if you're a trademark holder, or generic name, or name you invent. Now, the interest and the reason why I'm here today is that all those addresses can be written in a variety of writing systems from around the world. So we're not saying it's only Latin, but it's a combination of those. So here are the current 10 linguistic categories that we do accept as Fragrance, and I see that we here on the panel have the same preoccupations when it comes to confusion. But Latin, of course, and Chinese, Cyrillic, Japanese, Korean, Devanagari, Thai, Greek, and on the right side, Arabic and Hebrew. So basically, you can compose a Fragrance address with characters from all those linguistic categories, and we make sure, we try to make sure that they're not confusable for obvious security reasons. So the way we do that is through a selection of employable characters and also a set of rules. And those rules can be of many kinds. Here you have a few examples. One that Michel mentioned earlier, that is the difference between traditional and simplified Chinese. So we do sort that out. One that also was mentioned earlier, the use of letters that are the same in two different categories. For example, here the Latin A and the Cyrillic A, but also inside a given category, where we try to sort out the confusion. For example, here in Latin, between the big I, the one number, and the lowercase l. So it's basically we think about a big, unique registry with addresses in a variety written scripts. We had to come up with a way to avoid confusion, and we developed a model to deal with visual and semantic confusion, and it's actually a two-part model. Here it's a little more specific to our solution, but it will help you understand. We have the first part is called IFAP, and that is to make sure that the address respects the pattern. Basically, there's a site network name before the star and a site name after the star, whereas FACR is the set of rules that are related to languages themselves. So maybe in this group here, you'll be more interested in FACR. And actually, we are also interested in what you have to say for each of the of the rules in FACR. For example, I'd be happy to talk to the people who work on the Cyrillic or Armenian to understand how their rules are compared to ours. So, the whole idea here is to make it easy to recognize an address and make sure that that address is unique and cannot be confused with another one. Of course, because of the number of linguistic categories, we have a number of sets, what we call the valid network names. So Latin are separated, but in some cases they do overlap. So we had to come up with rules that help understand which category, which linguistic category a given address, would it be the site name or the network name, come from. So I'll just to make it more a little clearer, I'll present a few examples. And I hope you can see here on the screen. So let's go with the first one. And of course, those examples might be well known to you, and we'll see how we progress if it rings a bell. For example, the first one, we use the letter E with an accent, which is a letter in Unicode, but we don't accept the combination of E and the accent. That's in Latin. So that's when we see those, we say the network name is not compliant in the second column here. Second line, when it comes to confusion between the hello on the left in Latin and hello using the Latin letter iota, then here we reject the second form because the Latin letter iota is not well used. It's not an employable character. Third case is here when we write in Latin PayPal and PayPal using one letter borrowed from a different linguistic category, in this case the A from Cyrillic. Well, in that case, we say it's not employable because it's not valid. We cannot do that. You cannot use a letter from a different case. And also, there's another rule where, let me switch, go a little further. Yes, Strasse. Here, we consider the sharp S in German as being the same thing as two S's, of course, as far as name resolution, so that you cannot register those two names independently. They are considered to be identical in our view. There's another example here with hello. That's a well-known example where you have the capital O on the left and the zero on the right. Those are considered to be confusing because they are similar visually. In this case, what we say is they are convergent. So we do calculate a technical form called the conversion form for each of those network names, and if the technical form happened to be identical in both cases, then those two names are deemed to be convergent and therefore cannot be registered separately. So there was a lot of Latin here. There's one more here. On the left, you have AMIS, which is visually confusable with ARNIS. So in this case, we say M is equivalent or convergent with RN, and therefore those two forms cannot be registered separately. Now, in a different category, for example, Chinese, I'm not a Chinese speaker myself, but I it looks like some characters look exactly the same depending on different scripts used in Japanese. So in this case, because the two characters, the 3078 and the 30D8, look the same, we consider they are convergent and therefore cannot be registered separately. The next example is was mentioned by Michel earlier, the use of simplified Chinese and traditional Chinese. So here the two characters are not visually confusable, but because they mean the same thing, because they're semantically identical, then we consider that those two forms are convergent. And to finish this, just two more examples. Here we have what we call the inter linguistic category convergence, which aims at identifying two forms that are completely written in using scripts from different linguistic categories, but still could be confused. And the two examples are scope in Latin, so S-C-O-P-E, and the equivalent in Cyrillic, which looks the same, but exactly is formed by five letters that are not Latin. In this case, we calculate the interlinguistic category convergence form, and we determine that they are identical and therefore cannot be registered separately. Remember, we have one unique registry, so we have to make sure that every single form is different from the next. Last example, and then here we combined two types of rules. If you take beat in uppercase, B-E-A-T in Latin, that can be written in Greek with the same visually identical letters, B-E-A-T, of course, they're different code points. But because beat, B-E-A-T in Greek, can also be written in lowercase, and I will call them beat as well, but even though they're not Greek letters, I mean, that those three forms are convergent and therefore cannot be registered separately, which means that if you look at the first, the one on the left, B-E-A-T, and the one on the bottom, they look different. They're using different terms, but still they are considered as convergent because they're both convergent with a common form. So thank you. Just to reiterate, we are interested in working with specialists in each linguistic categories. And so if you want to see me after this presentation, we'll be happy to talk. In the slides, you have resources that are online to know more about the project and know more about how we could work together in making those rules better and more useful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We are done with, we're actually exhausted our time allocated, but we do have the room. It's the room for another 15, 20 minutes at least. So if you have any questions to the panelists, I think we can please use a mic and let's address at least a few questions before we conclude.
Sarmad, if I can just say while you're waiting for the first question, the remote participants, of which there are 13, wanted to thank each of the speakers. Along the way, they each wanted to thank you all for the information, so I thought I'd let you know. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Hello. Yes, my name is Mikhail Mumin. I'm part of the Arabic script generation panel on TFA IDN, and I had a question for the... My name is Mikhail Mumin. I'm part of the Arabic script generation panel and of TFA IDN, and I have a question for the representative of the Cyrillic script generation panel. You mentioned that you have a number of languages which you are looking at, which you're studying and considering their repertoire for integration, but you also mentioned some 95 ethnic minority languages on which no research work was conducted. So I was just wondering if you were publishing some information on which languages you looked at, which languages you didn't look at, and qualification on why you did that and why you did not do that eventually. I think that would be helpful. Thank you.
Thanks for your question. So we looked at a Russian language, and in Russia you have these 95 minority languages with Cyrillic scripts. So we looked at general Russian language and general Russian script. So this was a basic of our work, but we will look at every minority language under Russian languages or language.
This is Ahmed Bakht. I'm from Pakistan. I'm working for an Arabic IDN. My question is that as a community, we are looking for to accommodate more and more languages. And integration panel is looking for the security. So what would be the win-win situation where we can accommodate more and more languages and not compromising the security? Means without compromising the security.
I mean, there is obviously a balance here to establish between, you know, scope, I mean, or breadth, if you want, on security.
Comprehensive.
The thing is, you know, we're on the route here. We're not trying to define LGRs for second zone. So you have way more capability if you want to represent more in sub zones. The route is really not going to be, you know, used. You're not going to have hundreds of thousands of entries on the route. I mean, it's not going to happen. There's a cost to be, you know, to create an entry. So it's also important to maintain security. So when you get, you know, the more sometimes some of those languages introduce a security issue on through the confusable. I mean, there's only so many ways to represent, you know, especially on the Latin set or the even Cyrillic, you have a lot of characters that look very similar. On some of them have minor variation. So the more you introduce some of those variations, the more you introduce security issues. So, I mean, I don't have really, you know, I don't have a black and white answer to you. You just have to, you know, balance the need to be comprehensive on the need to be secure. And also, you know, we try to restrict to in the way we describe the MSR, in fact, that was kind of one of the elements we used. We were trying to have some notion of usage. You know, it's not just because a language exists. It also has to be in everyday use. So we're not trying to be a collection of academic collection of everything that was ever done on Earth. It has to be used today. So we're not trying to, like, you know, I mean, the root is not really a linguistic repository. Is there to be creating identifiers that can be used on a safe way. So there's some balancing constraint on what we can do. On, I think we express that also on creating the MSR. On, to some degree, you have to, you know, for us, the MSR is some sort of a sandbox. On, you have to say within the boundary. On, we kind of helping you by basically making MSR that is already taking those considerations into account. So as long as your minority language, you know, is on the MSR, you have a good starting point to do your work on, but then you still have to justify why you want that. So there's, again, sorry, I don't have really, you know, a good answer for you, but it's really basically a judgment call that all of us have to do at some point, how far you want to go in breadth on comprehensiveness compared to the security issue.
Yeah, Edwin?
We actually have a question and an answer on the remote participation here. Questions from Yoshido Yoneya. I need concrete reason for not mixing the ASCII. Otherwise, please put... Oh, sorry. It is.
You want to answer that? Because we... Are you also pointing the answer to that?
Right, the answer is actually posted on here as well. From ASMAS. The procedure's already fixed. Established that the IP gets... to make the decision in case the script mixing needs to be allowed in some additional cases, but none were foreseen.
Michelle, you want to comment on that further?
Yeah, I mean, for the ASCII mixing, I mean, there's another reason that obviously if you add ASCII mixing, you're, again, you know, putting your own script in the mix of the Latin, Greek, Cyrillic confusion study. So you're basically putting a big monkey wrench in your own LGR formation. Because now you have to coordinate with three additional LGRs. So that's, you know, that's kind of a process issue, is obviously. But at the same time, you know, we have to, at this point, draw a line on, I don't really think that most LGR need really ASCII. They can do that on their own IDN, I mean, on their own in TLD or in subzones. But, you know, the root is a shared resource. the same way, like I saw, you know, document where I was seeing like digit being proposed or dash. This is not possible. We don't allow OBC. Don't even come to us with, you know, a proposal to have digits or dash in the root, because, you know, this is a non-starter. MSR is your sandbox, and please don't go outside of it. And we don't have dash or digits in the MSR.
Thank you. Edmund?
Edmund Chung here. So I guess I'd like to offer an observation on in terms of the integration panel and your work on this. I think, you know, the MSR too is great, and you've spent a lot of time around it. The Bible, as you you refer to it, are the procedures that is you know that was created through the community for over a long time, and it's a, you know, it's a very solid document. However, I guess it's probably not very useful or sometimes problematic to try to refer to it as Bible, both in the sense of it and the name of it, because part of the program, I understand that within the current time frame and all of that, we should play, you know, within this structure and procedures. However, part of the program is to review the entire process as well in a little while. So I don't think it is conducive to the dialogue if we keep being overly prescriptive on, you know, on certain things. I understand why the motivation and all that, and I support those motivations. However, if you look at some of the working groups, the some of the generation panels versus the others, especially for those who hasn't been in the discussion as more and are just coming in, they need space to explore the linguistic issues on their own a little bit, and before being overly, you know, prescriptive on it. Certain scripts, and certain, like for example, Chinese, I take it as an example. Being prescriptive would be very useful for those cases. But, you know, I sometimes talk to the Koreans, and when they consider Hanja, it might not be as useful if being overly prescriptive, because they haven't quite explored the entire linguistic issues yet. You know, we probably come back to, you know, those parameters and, you know, those issues. And when it comes down to actually making decisions for the final LGR that is published, those are, you know, those would certainly be very, very useful and very critical. However, to allow for the community to explore what, you know, what is needed from their own language generation panel, I think that's actually it would actually be more conducive to the overall conversation. That's my observation. And then I actually have a question about, you know, it's interesting, the Armenian panel raised a rather interesting question. They looked at the Armenian script versus Latin, Greek, and Cyrillic. And I know the current thinking is that the Latin, Greek, Cyrillic needs to be, you know, kind of lumped together. And so it kind of brings my question is, how does the integration panel decide which scripts go together? The Han script might be easier because it's, you know, kind of unified. The others might be more difficult, like, you know, is Armenian supposed to do that? Is Armenian between, what about Armenian and Georgian? What about, you know, so just curious how the IP would try to make those determinations. Thank you.
You know, to some degree, that's why in the integration panel we have, you know, encoding experts. You know, I've been working in Unicode on 10.6.6 for over 20 years, so I guess I have some knowledge of what it takes to do those kind of determination. In the case of Armenian, in fact, it's reasonably simple because, unlike, you know, Latin, Greek, and Cyrillic, when you find, in fact, in a given device, you know, those languages, you have total perfect homoglyph between those three. And you can make full words. It's very easy to make a full word in other languages that will look exactly the same. Piece of cake. You can do There's hundreds of them you can make. Between Armenian and those, there is basically zero. There is almost no opportunity. If you want, the intersection between Armenian and any of the other three is so limited, and in fact, you even need a special font to have that, because most of the font don't even... I mean, you saw in the example, they were not looking the same. They were similar, but not the same, with few exceptions like the O. I mean, the O, yeah, is very... You know, there are not that many ways to do a circle that means O. So, but everything else, you know, you have something that changed. And if you have a full word, you're not going to have really, you know, a lot of confusability. And if you have such kind, you know, confusable, they're going to be catched basically at a higher level, in my opinion. They're going to be catched by the name confusability panels that you have in ICANN when an application is being judged, if something is really in your face. But Armenian does not really have confusability at the kind of level with the other scripts that Latin, Greek, and Cyrillic have. Obviously, there's a judgment call here. I recognize this is a judgment call, and we have to exercise it at some point. But in my opinion, Armenia does not have to do a confusability coordination with Latin, Greek, and Cyrillic. It's not really justified. Yeah, it's basically, you know, a judgment call that within the IP we are making. Again, to answer your first concern, to some degree, to make this whole process work, we need to have a framework. So for now, we have a framework. We're using it. If the community wants to revise it at some point, you know, we will accept it. You know, we have at this point to work within the framework, which is basically establishing an MSR on, you know, reading the procedure when we have an issue, and we go through it, and we basically use it as a way to answer concerns. And as long as that is our law, if you want, we have to follow it. Is the community change the law on us? We'll follow the new law. You know, it's nothing. But we need a framework. We can't just work, you know, with totally open question on basically having that document in SAC is very helpful for us to be able to make progress.
Just quick follow-up, I guess, Edmund here again. So yes, I appreciate that very much, and you know, I obviously personally I've fought long and hard for that procedure to be in place, and not in a, you know, not about to change it at this point. However, you know, if similar questions or similar requests that kind of violates the procedures keep coming up, we should, you know, yes, we should say that this version doesn't work, but we should also take those issues down, and when it comes to review, maybe take a look at whether, you know, changes are called for. So that's the point.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, so we have another question.
Excuse me. Dusan wants to comment on that.
Of course.
I will add some from my presentation. The point that we start with Latin and Greek is historical. This is the point why we chose this. But this is no border. We cannot finish only on that variants, and this is not a full job.
So we'll take one more question on remote, and then we'll conclude.
Thank you. Question for Peter Green. For script visual similarity, does each script panel have uniform standards to determine script visual similarity, for example, using tools and metrics, or does each panel have its own way to analyze visual similarity? Thank you.
You know, first of all, the first responsibility is really on the generation panels. We are just kind of basically looking at what, you know, the proposed LGR. We may have our own opinion, but really the generation panels need to have their own opinion on what is similar. And they have to do basically their homework on variants. They have to basically make a list on, you know, we will negotiate. They have to negotiate them with the other coordinated scripts, like, you know, Latin, Greek, Cyrillic. They have to agree basically on a common set. And then, you know, they submit their work, and they may work with us to ask our opinion, but our opinion is just that. It's just our opinion. But at the end, we for sure we're going to verify, you know, the end result. And there is obviously some judgment call of what is similar or not, especially between even Greek, Cyrillic, and Latin. The similarities sometimes is really in your face, is 100%, while you take, you know, very common fonts, that are widely available, and you find 100% similarity. And for some of them, it's not that obvious. You have 80% or less. And, you know, there's a judgment to be made there. And again, I mean, you don't have to make variants everything. There's other processes beyond the LGR on the to do that. You know, if you have confusability, at some point, you know, this is going to be addressed by a protocol that is above the, you know, the LGR formation. You have, when, you know, a domain is proposed for allocation or delegation of those things, there's a lot of more processes going to be applied on. Someone may object for name confusability issues. So we don't have to capture everything. We have to kind of capture the obvious cases that are really should be done mechanically. So nobody has to spend time or energy to do study for those. But there will still always be some, you know, part of it that will be, that will require basically some judgment, a human, you know, eyes looking at it and saying, are these too close, and we should not really have those two be delegated, for example, to two different entities. And that's beyond us. I mean, we have nothing to do on that as an integration panel. And I think, you know, so that is a multiple step process. And so similarities should really be taken, I would say, with to be to some degree conservative. You want really to capture the one that has so much in your face that you have to, you know, put a limit on those. And beyond that, it's really up to, you know, the further process to do the determination.
Thank you. And thank you all for staying longer than the scheduled time participating. Let's thank the panelists and then conclude the session. Thank you.